tell us about Kingsley. Like, a lot of people know the name Bartholomew. You and your brother have been in racing since you probably, you know, were in nappies. With Wolfden, what promoted you to think this is a great idea and this is what I want to do, because you're a man of, you know, a great deal of experience in racing?
Well, it started with just to do something different. So I've been punting since I was, you know, as you said, in nappies. So let's talk 30 years of, you know, consistent punting. And I grew up on the track, which it was so much fun on the track. It was just so vibrant. It's such a great theatre. But nowadays, just sitting in front of a computer, it's quite sterile. So something different. But also, I learned so much on the racetrack as well. And I want to bring that back, recreate the betting ring through Wolfden, through an app where people can go and they can chat and they can learn, and there's education that we can share ideas, because punting can be such a solitary environment, sitting at home. Most people punt from home now, just sitting there by themselves. So it's about community for me. It's about education, it's about community.
When you're in the Sydney ring, and that was, you know, the upper echelon, and you had everyone, you had politicians, it didn't matter where they came from, they all flooded to the racetrack. And the idea was to try and get a better price than everyone else, really. Yeah. That was the basis of it, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And price has been lost now, hasn't it? It's all about incentives. And the incentives are the trade now, whereas when I was growing up, it was all about the odds. You know, did you get 9-4 or did you get 2-1? Or it's been 9-4 into 6-4 now, so I won't back it. But nowadays, people don't talk about odds as much, and I'd love to see that come back. And that's one thing that I always talk about, is the odds, because...
But that's because young people nowadays don't understand percentages.
They don't. Well,
we've taught them to bet, but we haven't taught them how to bet, if you know what I mean.
No. Well, the majority comes from bookmakers as well. It comes from your top-tier bookmakers. And it is swinging around where there's a bit more education, but that's another thing that I sat back and looked at. All this content's coming from bookies. So I wanted it to come from a punter's perspective as well, so that there is a different sort of element to it.
It's funny now, because the younger punters feel the cuddle from the betting agencies, but in our days, enemy, I need to bring you down. Like, the whole concept has changed, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well,
and like you and I being old schools with Hutch, Gab maybe a bit, but but it's a different scenario now, because people are embraced by their betting companies.
Yeah, they are. They do get a nice cuddle, especially when they're losing, the arm goes around. But yeah, there was no cuddles out on the racetrack at the time. And that's why I'm excited about these punters clubs as well. So you're all grouping together to try and bring down the enemy, as you say. But yeah, just getting back to odds, it's just so important that you do secure the right price. And there's so many, especially for smaller punters out there now, there's so many good deals that you can get with bookies, with the odds boost and the blah, 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 that you should really be shopping around and being aware that there's not just one bookie in town, but there's a lot of them. And a lot of them offer different deals. And it's all about getting the best return for your dollar at the end. We all might like number 4 in the next race, but Gab might get $5, Hutch, you get $4.50, TB, you get $4, and I get $3.50. And at the end of the day, it all adds up, and I'm the one who's going to end up losing, and Gab's going to be winning at the end of the day.
My son, who never showed any interest in gambling, loves having a bet now. Yeah. And what he does, he says, "Dad, I got all the accounts. As soon as the special comes up, I get 50 back if I run a place there." Yeah. He's got it covered. He says, "This is great." He loves these bonus bets that he gets, because he feels he's getting a second chance, and it gives him more money to keep turning over, and he loves it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the protest payout and the this and that and that, but after you do, you know, push them to the limits, then they will dry up as well, and you won't be given the promotions anymore. And what are you left with then? You're left with odds, and you need the ability to be able to gamble. You need the ability to be able to look at different markets and read markets, and that's what's lost as well. Like, you can look at Betfair and line it up. You can look at the three totes. We're blessed in Australia in a way, and it's a curse for a bigger punter, but we've got four markets. We've got Betfair, we've got the on-course market, we've got the corporate bookies, and they're all quite small. There's no big market, like in Hong Kong, for example. You've obviously got the big tote. The other one's the tote, which the tote pools are diminishing so much that for a professional, they've sort of turned off from the tote, because you can't turn over any money there anymore. But if you do know how to gamble, you can play them off against one another. And then instead of looking at the 125%, you get it down a bit. I mean, best tote with SP on favourites, you're averaging about 106% if you're doing that. If you're lucky enough to get best of the best, you're into 102, 103 sort of territory. So you can get that margin down now, but
Well, in the old days at Rose Hill and that, you could get 98, 95% of the shop good card.
Yeah, I mean, top fluck. Yeah. Top fluctuation, for example, was often under 100%.
And it was great. Top fluck was great, but then you worked out that you're killing yourself, so top fluck disappears now.
It does, but you could also play around with the market a little bit more then and manipulate certain markets and push things out and used to have a lot of fun with that.
It's great for a lot of the small players, like you're saying, Terry, but how do you see the landscape for a lot of the bigger players? Kingsley, obviously you're one of those and, you know, it's about higher turnover. How do you see the current landscape? Because there have been a lot of changes in recent years with the taxes.
Oh, there's been huge. I mean, the POC tax is just, like, it's a punter's tax really, isn't it? And I'm hearing whispers that New South Wales is going to go up to 20, which is just, it's just another nail in the coffin. I mean, why don't they make it 30 and just, you know, throw the whole bathwater out and we won't have to worry about it anymore, because what's happening is it's just stifling competition completely. There's no competition in the market anymore. It's just everyone sort of generally puts up the same price, so they all fall, you know, into line. But I think the landscape isn't too bad for a smaller punter. For a large punter, it's hard, and it's hard for two reasons. One is it's hard to get any volume down. It's hard to bet big now. Before, when I was, you know, on the Sydney track, and even after that, in my early 30s, you could bet big. Tom Waterhouse, for example, was betting me to win 150,000 best fluck in the run. And he may have liked the horse or not, may not have, but he could get rid of that money. It was just a big circulation. But now it's very hard to get any money down. Yes, there's 100 bookies out there, but probably a large, like 50% of those bookies will just bet unders. They just bet a heap of percentage. And the rest of them, you can't get to all of them because they change the price so quickly. So you might go to three or four of them, then the odds started tumbling down. So
a lot has to do with technology too, does it? Because cash was king. There's no cash anymore.
No.
You know, people are told, don't use cash. And that makes it a little bit tougher too, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it does. But you mentioned technology there, but that's what the, you know, all the bookies are just basically have algorithms that run off each other. And when one moves, they all move. So it's hard to get big now. I used to chase a fair bit back in the day, which is a big no-no, but I was, you know, having a good run and I'd chase on longer price horses, but you can't chase anymore. There's no chasing because you can't really
There's no value on what you... Absolutely.
Which is not good for the game either.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I suppose the younger generation, Kingsley, you know, that don't know much about racing, for example, and they see sport and they see racing. I mean, something that you're doing with Wolf Den, that hopefully will help some of them, you know, use that as a vehicle to get some interest, to get some information. That must be one of the key components as well, because we need that next generation to come
through. Yeah, well, the next generation are mostly interested in sport, obviously. So they come in, they start betting on sport, and then they start getting interested in racing. But the younger generation are just fed multis, and the same go multis constantly.
Which is a high percentage.
It is a high percentage. I mean, there's nothing wrong on racing. There's nothing wrong with taking a multi. But the problem with taking a multi is you've got to take it with the one bookmaker. So you can't say, you know, Ladbrokes are $3.50, I want to take that leg, and Sportsbet might be $4. You're forced into it. So actually, it comes down to a price thing. It's not so much a multi.
Kingsley Bartholomew is our special guest in the studio. King, you put together the Wolf Den. Tell us how that came about, and where did you get the name Wolf Den? How did you come up with that idea?
Richie Irvine came up with the name Wolf Den, and it sort of stuck. We all loved it. And how it came about was in 2022. It's just a group of mates having fun, really, and putting together an app to try and form a community. So that's where it really started, and it's grown. Daniel O'Sullivan, who's been on the show quite a bit, he's involved. Scott Fitzsimmons, Adam Sparrow, Matt Taylor. So it's just a group of mates all having fun. And after that, AI came in, the form product came in, which is a form product that I've always bet off, but I just tailored it to the app sort of thing and to share it and also educate around that as well.
Okay, for our viewers watching in there, what is it? How are you doing your form? Tell us your way and how it's done.
It's analysis on every part that you can possibly imagine. So I've got data coming in from everywhere, whether it be through sectional times or time, you know, race times, early speed. I'm looking at weight. I'm looking at track condition. I'm looking at video comments as well, and I'm piecing everything together. So everything you could possibly imagine, I'm looking at it, analysing, trying to find out what the market has missed. And then if I see the markets miss something, then it'll go and it'll be a piece of the puzzle. Like horses are treated differently who are first up based on distance ranges, and how you interpret that to a horse that's running say, within the last 1 to 7 days and how it might perform. So I'm looking back and trying to find patterns in history sort of thing to feed all into the algorithm, which then spits out the bullet rating. It's and then matched with the market and spits out a bullet rating.
I see your bullet rating. Sometimes you have a pretty, like there's horses that might be, for example, pretty short in the market and they'll be, but there'll be a number of rating points off what your suggestion is. It's interesting that you got such a big discrepancy in you know in some of those selections, which is great. I mean, it's
yeah. I mean, it's not a traditional time rating.
Time rating. Yeah.
It's actually not. It doesn't represent. Doesn't represent how fast the horse is going to run. It represents what the market is missing. So I'm, yeah. I'm coming from it from a different angle.
So it's satisfying the factors that you've put in there.
Correct. And a lot of improvement factors there with lightly raced horses or horses going up in distance. I'm looking at historically. Given that scenario, what that horse is capable of doing.
So do you put it all, you get all the info and you come up with whatever you think or do the punters, like, see all that info broken down? Does that make sense?
The computer churns the information. Okay. So every night all the data will feed into the model and it's churning all the different scenarios out and then it will mix that up with the current market.
And you share that with your...
That's right, yeah. So if you have a look at... If you download the app and have a look, yeah. You'll see the bullet rating. There are also underneath factors, which I put in there, might be up in weight or it might have great sectionals or it might have great time ratings or, you know...
Here it is. Here's a good example. I like
different scenarios.
I like the name of this, the golden bullet.
The golden bullet, yeah. It's supposed to be putting a bullet through the bookie's heart.
Yeah, I like
haven't been going that good. Oh, Saturday there were 4 from 5, but prior to that, they're due for a good run, actually.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
And that's just like something you really think's going to win.
I think it's value.
Yeah.
I think it's value, and there isn't a price. You'll see there's no price attached. The idea is you get that information and then it's your job to get the best price for the selection.
Yep.
So all the analysis, all these different scenarios are run based on the SP or the best of three totes and the SP. So if you can better that, you'll end up, well, historically, you'll end up showing a profit.
And the importance with a horse like that, Morning Glory, 320, obviously, when you put that out, started around 220 as well. So that's the key, you know, like you're getting in at the right time. So and generally speaking, Kings, when are these sort of, like for a Saturday, for example, someone gets on board, you're recording this on a Thursday?
Well, we do the Saturday set on a Thursday, which comes out Thursday arvo, but the actual, on the app and on the website, the ratings are released at 10 a.m. because I want a bit of intelligence coming from the market well, the other things that are backed early and the market's moving around. So, we release a bit, and it's hard tipping on a Thursday sometimes, which you know as well, like tracks change and you know, things happen.
Yeah.
And Mornington Glory was a funny one because it sat... I didn't know whether to attack it early and I ended up just waiting. But with about 25 minutes to go, the money just came in. I don't know
relentless.
If it was top fluck money or from different agencies or on track, but it just, within the space of a minute, it went from 290 into about 240.
Yeah, it was a big go, that's for sure. And so was the one on the last, actually. But it was significant. It didn't exactly have all favours and was too good.
And they both won, which is even better.
Yeah, exactly.
Kingsley, just explain to layman punters, you see your horse, and it goes from $2.50 out to $5. Like in the old days, those market shifts weren't that pronounced as they are nowadays. So are there a lot of big firms betting that are obviously controlling the market to some degree? So as an individual punter, how much should you put into that market move? If you think the horse can win, how much respect do you need to show that if you've got your own system and way of doing it?
Well, at the end of the day, you've got to back yourself.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's about not taking on that horse. I back a lot of blowers, like Morning to Glory was on and it was off the map, but a lot of my horses blow. It might be 250 out to five, but the key is to get the $5 and not be taking the 250.
Yeah.
I think that you should possibly, I reduce my bets down on them because a lot of my bets on those horses do go on Betfair because Betfair is traditionally, so Betfair will control the market for a lot, especially in the last 5 minutes when you see these big blows. It's the bookies normally following Betfair where the money's coming because the big volume comes in, which are the bigger syndicates, coming with 2 minutes to go. And the market will gravitate in that last 2 minutes. And on the country races, there isn't a lot of volume there. So if my horse is consistently the best price on Betfair, I will reduce my stake on that horse. Reason being that I can't get all my money down at top odds.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a horse like Mornington Glory, I'm, you know, might be having 10,000, 15,000 on, whatever it may be. and I can know I can get that down at a decent price. So I sort of bet to win as much as the market will allow me. But to answer your question, don't be scared of blowers at all, because there's so much percentage in the market now. Like if we look at the next races, it'll be 125, 130%, whereas the SPs are going to be around 115. And then if you throw in Betfair, we're down to 105 sort of thing. So most horses are going to drift nowadays, whereas before, back in the day, they'd put up 115, might get down to 105 or 110, 105. It was a more vibrant market. So, no, we see a lot of blowers winning now.
And the other thing, Terry, probably, and it's along the line of, you know, pricing and being price sensitive. I mean, if you have a horse marked a certain quote, then you've got to trust your judgment like King's.
But a lot of punters think, oh, I'm on
the that's probably the more important exercise, isn't it? Like getting through the process on you say, back your judgment, but then putting that onto paper in terms of price.
Well, it does. It just depends how you do it. So at the moment, I don't bet off price, which is something that I think I need to be able to price. With the way the market is now, I think being price sensitive is more important than ever, and it's something that I've never been able to master. But I've been working very hard at it the last sort of 2-3 months, and I think I've cottoned on to.
See, that surprises me you say that, because I thought, given your experience and everything, you're still learning as well.
I'm always learning
on something that, you know, I would say you probably should have been doing before.
Yeah, I'm always learning, and then you've got to keep changing as a punter. You know, you're up, you're down, but the market's up and down as well. And things change. I mean, how different it was from the 80s to the 90s to 2000 when Betfair came in to now where corporates are sort of, the market percentage is going. I mean, you need to adapt. And as a professional punter, if you're not adapting to market conditions and also new data coming in, whether it be sectional times or, you know, some new video analysis, if you're not incorporating that new stuff into your model...
Get left behind.
You get left behind, yeah.
Kingsley, racing nowadays has become very much a television sport, a bit like the NRL, very much a television sport. But I love going to the races. I love seeing the horses in the mounting yard. I love talking to people. Like, that's what we miss, what I miss now being an old codger.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I grew up on the track. I love going to the track, and I never go to the track anymore, unfortunately, and haven't done for probably 15 years or 16 years or something nowadays. But, yeah, there's nothing better. And I love seeing people at the track. During carnival times, you'll see the crowds full. There's nothing better. But we need the betting ring back as well. You need the betting ring where the on-course bookies, there's a bit of vibrancy, and it's all split up now, unfortunately.
But they've been driven out. They've been driven out.
Yeah, they have. They have. But the thing, you know, things change. Things change. We need to move on. But I'd hate to see the on-course bookmaker eventually, you know, die, and they're pretty close to it, I suppose, now in a way.
That said, Everest Day looks a great day to go to. I mean, they get a fantastic crowd there, and it looks like you know, the younger generation have embraced that day in Sydney.
Absolutely, yeah. No, they have the live bands now. What about the scenes when Darryl Braithwaite's singing the horses at Cox Plate Day and all that sort of stuff? So they're doing a great job, I think, trying to get people back to the track.
But Sweet Caroline, I love that idea. Yeah. They stole that from the UK, but it's successful.
It's been overdone a bit now, though, Sweet Caroline.
You we need a
TV
ad. Even another Neil Diamond song would do. You're a Neil Diamond man too, aren't you, Terry?
Yeah, I played Neil Diamond to my kids because I was educating them when they were young with Akka Dakka, Cole Chisel and Split Ends and that. Played Neil Diamond. They said, get this off, will you?
You're an Akka Dakka man?
Yeah.
A friend of mine saw him at Wembley about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Said they were very good Akka Dakka, still going around.
65, 68. Is it 68 and 73?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the energy to get a kid, keep touring like that.
Yeah.
You still got it? It'd
be no good if you had gout in your foot.
Don't ask him about what we had a good debate here one day. Don't ask him what his favourite
Akka Dakka song is. Don't start that. Don't bring that rubbish up again.
Absolutely butchered it as well. Just on another note, what is, I think, of some interest, Kings, a lot you and I see on your platform and a lot of other platforms, are sort of talking about, I suppose, a voice for the punters. And it's spoken about a lot with different people, and there is no voice. I mean, what can we do, I suppose, as a collective going forward? Is there something that can be done in that space to represent punters?
Yeah, it's a big question, and I don't really have all the answers for it, but the more, you know, the more punters are out there, there's not many professional punters left in Australia now. A lot of them have been driven out, like Dr. Nick used to put a lot of money through the betting rings, and he left in 2019. So it's a very small community of actual, you know, professional punters that are left. And
because we hear punters, a lot of them say, like, we've got no representation. And we all do it because we all like bet, but... So what do we do to change it then?
Well, Richie Irvine's done a great job lobbying, you know, and speaking to Racing New South Wales and Racing Victoria. We're always in communication with them, trying to get things through. But it's more so like the government are talking about the advertising laws that are coming in. No one consults punters for these. A lot of the other changes, punters aren't consulted, and I think that, you know, they should be. What the answer is, I'm not really sure, because everyone's so busy. Probably the answer is to put some sort of committee together,
yeah,
I suppose.
That's what I'm thinking.
There is a punters board type thing, but who's going to put their hand up and sort of do it? We're all too busy trying to
find a winner.
Trying to give it to the bookies.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I think Racing Victoria are at that realisation point now where they know that we've got to look after the punter. I think there is a bit of a change as well.
There's a rank and file. There's the bigger players.
Yeah.
There's recreational. You know, like it's.
Yep. Because in the old days, King, you'll know as well as I do, the punters were treated like mugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you know, there was no respect for them at all. Just do whatever we want, get their money, and that's all that counts. But it's different now. You can't compete like that.
My concern is that they're going to leave it too late. Before turnover will drop, and it's hard. Like punters are pretty habitual. It's hard to get to get them back. Like I might, for example, move on and bet on UK racing, for example, or Hong Kong or something, a different market. I've forgotten about Australia then. It's not about me. As I said before, it's about the recreational punter, and the percentage in the markets is getting too big. And there's no competition in there. We need competition. Any market needs competition. We need competition to come back in. And that...
That comes from opinions. Now, we don't have opinions. We just have a computer that says, this is the market. Everyone says, that's the market, so we all follow.
Well, I suppose the other thing is that the punters all feel like, and you hear it, like I said, on various platforms where people want a voice, but I suppose it's up to the punters to put something together so there is a voice.
From a bookie's point of view as well, like they're under the pump a lot with this taxation structure. So if you've got a client who has having 2,000 best tote every favourite, best tote with SP, which the bookmakers offer, he's no good to them. He'll lose at 5 or 6%. Their expenses are 8 or 9%. That's what they need before anything else goes out. And so he's no good to them. So they've got to move him on. How's that good for the industry where you can have a guy who's, you know, a recreational punter just having 2 on every favourite? He's no good to you. He's no good to the bookie. The punter loses and the bookie loses.
Well, how do you get the government to lower the taxes? Because they don't want to lower the taxes.
I think it's about having a different structure, I think. A different structure. It's not so much... Like, if you lowered the taxes tomorrow, the point of consumption tax, would bookies become more competitive? I don't think a lot of them would. Some would. But some would just continue on. They'd become smarter. So I think if you... you know, your half tax or whatever, yeah, get a little
so
bit...
So is there enough governance? That's the question. Is there enough governance if that's the case?
I think you need a taxation system that encourages competition, encourages low percentage markets, and you're rewarded for stepping out of the crease and taking on a favourite risk.
Back in the day, like a Mark Reed would, you know, like, and his markets, he'd be happy to back his judgement and trade it. You know, we don't have that anymore.
We don't have it anymore at all, and it's sad. We need it, but you need a stimulated market. Forget about the market, we need growth. Like, let's forget about all the market and get so scared of it. Let's do things that are actually going to provide growth, not just stabilisation, which at the moment, stabilisation would be great when we're talking about taxes, turnover dropping 16%.
Let's look at the other side of it, Kingsley. What about product? Consumer product, is it a good product we have at the moment compared to, say, 10, 20 years ago? Is the product good? Because our representation of low-class horses use Victoria as a point, is so high. It's about more than two-thirds when you get to the benchmark mark 64 or around that mark. Does that have any bearing on it?
I think the product's fantastic. I mean, I think that the racing in general is fantastic, and you see it over carnival time as well. You see, you know, the people come out and people are really engaged with the product. You know, you guys do a great job. There's a lot of information for punters. I would like to see more jurisdictions working together for the greater good of racing as well, instead of fighting with each other over, you know, because you'll be fighting over the straps. The pie started big, then it'd be a big family pie, then we went to the 4 and 20 single, but we might be fighting over the custard pie soon.
And there's nothing wrong with a custard pie, mind you.
You like a party pie.
I do. I love a good pie.
Yeah.
I'm getting hungry now you're talking about pies.
What'd you have for lunch?
Not surprised after
I wish I'd had a pie. I wish I'd had a pie. The window opens, 20 years' time, where do you see punting on thoroughbred racing?
I think it will... it's a very good question. From a professional punter's point of view, I think it'll be very hard. I think that the markets will continue to become a lot more accurate. So from a professional, I think it's going to be hard. But I'd like to see a market where it is lower percentage and people can bet and they can make their choice and it might be 105 to 110% market where there is a lot of money involved and people can get value for their dollar.
A young punter sitting out there and he goes, right, I wouldn't mind getting involved in racing. Punting. Tell him what to do. Take the first step.
How old is he?
Well, he's old enough. He's over 18.
Yeah, well, the first step is just to get a feel for it and actually realise, you know, if you want to do it seriously, realise where your actual edge is. Do you have an edge? Do you have an advantage over the market? Or what are you interested in? Keep it simple at the start. Don't listen to, you know, too much of the noise about these models and, you know, algorithms and everything. What do you enjoy? Do you enjoy watching videos of races? Like, where do you think your edge lies? And then work from there and learn about percentages, which you mentioned before. Learn about odds. So just work on those two things. One, just hone your craft. And two, focus on getting the best prices.
Do we have enough trade workshops out there to teach people? Do we need to be doing more to
teach? Watch the Wolf Den boys in action. Yeah.
No, we've got Wolf Den. And there's some, like Daniel O'Sullivan, for example, has done a lot on the internet, a lot of, you know, great podcasts and great articles on that sort of thing. But it is getting harder to find. But the more you can sort of analyse your bets as well, I think the better, you know, through logical lens and, you know, just see whether what you're doing will work long term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I'm constantly learning. I've been doing it for 30 years. I'm constantly learning. You've got to constantly evolve. But, I mean, you can win. It's very hard, but there's a lot of winning punters out there, a lot of smaller winning punters. And even if you are a losing punter, make your goal not to lose as much, lose less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, I mean, the great attraction for a lot of people as well, and you know, is that the puzzle, there's so many different ways to do it. I think that's the great thing about racing. You know, you don't have to do this in order to win. There's a lot of different ways, and we've seen it all through racing in our lives that people do it differently. There might be the paddock, there might be, you know, your track walkers, there might be...
Well, there used to be long shot punters would always back the long shots and they only need one out of 20 to win and they get the cash.
Exactly. I think it comes down to what you feel comfortable doing a lot of the time. And as you say, that is the beauty of the game, isn't it? You know, we all might be doing form a different way, but, you know, we can all win in the long run. But I think keeping it simple and I think as well, like... time ratings are being, there used to be a big advantage in time rating, a 10% advantage in time ratings, but now the market's cottoned onto them and it's found them and there's not so much margin in time ratings anymore, something as simple as that. But I think things will come back to the old school methods because everything in life is so data driven now and there's so much data available. If you have an eye for, you know, 2-year-olds or track work or trials or doing video work, I think that those old school methods will come back. I think it's a great thing.
I'll get the old Don Scott out and have a read when I get home.
Still the number one book, isn't
still
it?
The number one book. But weights don't matter as much as they did in the old days because you had the 58 down to 46, 44 kilos. So the weight scale now has just been so compressed and horses with the rating system so compressed now, that makes it a bit tougher too, doesn't it, King?
It does. But you'll see those lightly raced horses, especially if they're on pace horses with an apprentice on, where they're getting, you know, they might be 54 and claiming two and they're down to 52. They're always well backed.
Mm.
They're lightly raced horses with no weight on pace, tick, tick, tick. They're always well backed horses. Mm. So people say weights don't matter anymore. I'm not so much in that camp. Like you look at your Melbourne Cup results, weights matter in cups. Mm. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. The longer the race, the more it matters. 1,000 metre race, I don't think weights play such a big advantage, which we saw with Bold Bastille on the weekend.
Well, you carry weight for a longer period. Like I give you 20 kilos of concrete and say, run 100 metres or run a mile, there's going to be a big difference in you.
Absolutely.
Could you actually get the 100?
Physics is physics, I suppose.
Could be for another day.
Exactly. But it is interesting, a lot of that, and even that we're talking about different ways of doing it, there's different opinions on I mean, it's factual, weight has to impact it, but for each horse to be different, for each distance to be different, but that's once again the beauty of the game as well. So the Wolf Den, just getting back to the app and what's on, you know, you'd get when you sign up, Kings, you're covering races every day? Is it in the main meetings or...?
We're covering the Wolf Den AI. You can sign up to Wolf Den for free. You can go on there. You can post bets, how bets and tips. You can go chatting. There's so much free action on there.
Tell us the team members here, because people are looking at these and they probably don't recognise the faces.
Yeah, so these are all obviously Dan O. We've got Richie from right to left. We've got Richie Irvine, Dan O. We've got Matt Taylor. Matt's a genius. His skill is studying the form.
Yep.
Then we've got Scott Fitzsimmons, who's been a great mate of mine for 20-plus years.
Well, he's been in the ring for a lot of times in Sydney, hasn't he?
Absolutely. He's been, putting money on in the ring. And they're the boys, and there's about three, four more of us. And, you know, you'll see if you tune into the live streams as well. We're all in there betting of a Saturday. I think we got one on this Saturday as well. So, it's just fun. We're just having fun.
Kingsley, thanks for joining us, buddy. We hope it goes well. We'll get you back and see how we run. And the boys made me, an ambassador? Or what would you call it? They gave me a cap today. They
said,
Richie said, I've got something special for you. We're going to be our number one ticket holder. Yeah. And for a stride, I got excited.
Yeah.
And then he gave me a cap.
You had to throw it back.
He gave me a cap. And because I was on television, I had to say, thank you very much. Yeah, very, very good. And really what I want to do is just...
You didn't want the cap.
You wanted cash.
I wanted cash, I still believe in cash, King. Cash is king. Good on you, Kingsley.
And before you go, Kings, have you got one that you've got playing later in the day for anyone watching?
You've got one more bet on AI race 10, number 4, Like a Swift.
Like a Swift.
I think it's about around the $4 or $5 mark. But that's my only bet left at Seymour for the day. But I was extremely impressed with Via Sestina on the weekend. I think she's going to be very hard to beat in the Cox Plate.
A couple of real stars going around last Saturday. Great
Thanks
having you
much.
In the studio, buddy. All the best in the future.
Thank you.